Hi everybody, welcome back to class. We're going through this course called Establishing a Daily Practice. I think it's class 8 in this whole Discovering Buddhism 7 teachings. We normally begin by taking refuge together, by generating the mind and the heart and saying prayers. So let's do that. So first of all, you guys get comfortable in your seat. Just ensure that your back is straight, your shoulders are relaxed, and your feet are either on a cushion or on the floor. If you like, you can close your eyes, otherwise you can keep them partially open or fully open. Now, once you feel comfortable, just let your body breathe itself. As you breathe, normally and naturally. Just focus on the feelings that arise in dependence upon your breathing. But try to find any rivers in the body that's affected by your breath, any movement, any feeling. And just acknowledge it. Now that the mind is calm and that you are focused, imagine that in the space in front of you appears the Buddha. His body is made of golden light. He is surrounded by other spiritual teachers, meditational deities, bodhisattvas, and so on. Remember, the Buddha is sitting on a golden throne. Meanwhile, you're sitting in front of the Buddha and his entourage. And you are surrounded by all sentient beings. These will include your parents, your family, strangers, and difficult people. And all of these people are just like you and I. They all do not want to experience different forms of suffering. They all like to be happy. So think that by you yourself come into contact with these teachings of the Buddha, sort of know how to be happy. You know that your happiness depends upon ethics, concentration, and wisdom. You know that disturbing emotions can be overcome, and you know how to do that. Wish to help others overcome suffering and discord and produce a greater sense of well-being with them, a sense of contentment, a sense of happiness. Life without someone saying anxiety. To increase your own well-being and help others do the same. Decide to take refuge in the Buddha, his teachings, and his spiritual community. Then affirm that by joining me and saying, I go for refuge, as I am, my teacher, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Sangha. By the merits I create, resisting to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, Dharma, and the Supreme Spirit. By the merit I create, resisting to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, Dharma, and Supreme Spirit. By the merits I create, resisting to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Think that lights and nectars pour from the heart of the Buddha and all the enlightened beings around it. These lights and nectars pour down from the heart, they wash over you and over all the beings around you. And these lights and nectars remove obstacles and empower your potential for enlightenment. So now recollect the four initial thoughts of compassion, love, joy, and equanimity. sides of this to develop these four states yourself, and then to establish every other being within these four immeasurable states. The firmness, join me in saying, may all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the biases of past or friends, hatred of enemies. Again, lights and nectar stream from the heart of the Buddha and the other enlightened beings. Is wash over you and everyone else surrounding you. Obstructions and negativities are removed. And again, your potential for complete enlightenment is empowered. You recollect the field of merit. And wishing to accumulate merit and to purify the mind a little more, we imagine them above us and say, reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions, accumulated since beginningless time, and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own and others' merits to the great enlightenment. And then to prevent any clinging to the merit and the ideas of self, we think that this body, our virtues, in fact, everything is utterly transformed to reappear as a pure offering to our teacher. It's often called a mandala. So we say, this ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Merit, four continents, the sun and the moon, I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Bhurata Mandala Kamayata Ame. So I've released the offering and the Buddha accepts it with delight and he smiles on us and we meet his gaze. And under the gaze of the Buddha, we feel accepted and at ease. And an emanation of the Buddha leaves his heart and moves through space and comes to the bottom of the crown of your head, facing in the same direction you are. The emanation descends downwards down to the level of your heart and then begins to expand, filling your body and mind with light and nectars. And the nectars and the light pour out through the pores of your skin, filling the 10 directions of space and establishing every being within space to now be within the enlightened state. I think that you can hear the mantra of the Buddha resonating throughout space. And hearing it, you start to recite it. Tayatam Vrini Mahavasam Tayatam Vrini Mahavasam Tayata Om Muni Maha Soma. This was recited a few times under your breath. And I think that you're establishing all beings into the path of enlightenment. That every being has this path within their mental continuum. And now breathing in through the nostrils, exhale through the mouth, with your eyes flutter open and move your body in whichever way you feel comfortable. Make yourself at ease. Okay, so today we're going to look at sort of three things. We're going to begin by looking at some of the morning practices that our Lama Zopa has recommended the students to engage in. Then we'll have a look at this practice for purifying the speech that we talked about last week. And then we'll have a last look at the evening practices Lama Zopa has also recommended. And so this material he's recommended, and what I'm sort of basing this course on, sort of around these books here and a few others. Now, the major material for us is this practice here called the Method to Transform a Suffering Life into Happiness. Now, we have some of these like that. I'm not sure if we have any more up the top. But for those of you who want to engage in the practices, the material is up on our website, and it's in the resources section. So if you look up there, you'll see this there and the meditation on the Shakyamuni Buddha. So every Dharma practice begins with what they call the motivation. So here I'll just sort of condense the motivation right down to just a couple of sentences here. And it's mainly taken from a book called Transforming Problems into Happiness. And here you can see Lama Zopa Rinpoche says that the purpose of having this precious human body is not simply to achieve happiness for yourself, but to eliminate the suffering of all other beings and bring them happiness. And this is the purpose of your life. But what he's saying here basically is, you know, you want to use your life to help others as well as yourself. And not just focused on yourself, but others also. So each morning when we wake up, we have this intention to serve. So with those of you who have jobs or go to work, you can sort of think, you know, work, view your work as service to all sentient beings. Because you are, aren't you? You are serving others when you go to work. So that is true. So just add a little bit, say, you know, I'm doing this work to serve all sentient beings, to bring myself and them to enlightenment. Some sort of simple thing like that. Now, the thing is with these motivations, I've made a very short one here. You can see it's just a couple of sentences. But in many of the different texts that complement these teachings, the motivation is much longer. So this particular book, I've brought a few of them up here. They're free, you just can make a donation if you choose to for them. And if you don't have them, they're here. So a lot of the material today is coming out of this particular book. And it talks a lot about the morning practices that I'll be talking about here. So in it, of course, it basically starts off with like the motivation, right? The purpose of life, he starts with that. And then he goes into what Dharma is and your motivation. Now, I was going to say some of these motivations are quite long. I don't know how much mental stamina you have, but if you finish that in a little bit more and you can't go on, like try and find a way to make it yours, a personal thing. So, okay, so I'm trying to work out in my mind. So often we will be asleep. Then our eyes will open and we'll be in bed, and now we have to start our day. So you could start off by like this motivation, which he often says, you wake up and you go, oh, thank God I'm still alive today. Or thank Buddha, thank you, all sentient beings, I'm still alive today. Thank goodness for that. Now I can continue to do the work I really want to do. Now I want to get myself enlightened and others. And that's the purpose of my life. You might say something like that. Then it's like, then what next to do? Now, it doesn't say this. I haven't come across this in the text saying do this. But as you'll see, when you look at these texts, like the Method to Transform a Life, a Happy Life and so forth, there's parts in it where you say particular mantras. So there's one here, and I'll just recite it to you, and you can easily find it in these books. It goes, Om Sambara Sambara Bimanasara Mahajava Hum. Om Samara Samara Bimanasara Mahajava Hum. And you're meant to say this seven times. So you could wake up, say a thing, and now say the mantra. Now, why do you want to say the mantra? Because it increases the merit of the day 100,000 times. So you only have to say it seven times. Now, everything you do, spirit is increased. Now, you might be sitting there thinking, well, how does that happen? Like, do I just got to say this and suddenly this marvelous thing is going to happen? And I have to say, well, I can't really tell you like how it happens because this is based on Tantra. But Tantra is a legitimate and authentic teaching of the Buddha. And if you want to become enlightened, you're going to have to move into Tantra anyway. And so this is just the way to say they're using your speech in an enlightened way, a way an enlightened being would speak. So they're using Sanskrit mantras. They're never going to do you any harm. And like I say, it's going to increase your merit 100,000 times. Hey, I like to go easy, quick. No. No mantras, Buddhist mantras, will increase negativities. They won't do that. So if you can say something like this, you go, okay, now everything else that follows after this, you know, like it increases. I'm getting better and better, a heck of a lot faster than if I can say it. So you could do something like that. Sleep, mantra. Then Lama Lopa recommends that you get up and that you do the 35 Buddha prostration practice. So really these are just, these are suggestions for those who have got a guru devotion, or guru yoga relationship with Lama Lopa Rinpoche. Do people here have practices that they do every day, like a sadhana or something like that? Yeah, so some people do. If you don't, that's fine too. Perhaps you could sort of integrate the sadhana with us. I'll show you how to do that later on in these teachings. But if you don't, like I said, he suggests we start off with the prostrations to the 35 Buddhas. When you have a look at this practice, so in here there's a commentary on it. There's a picture of them like this. And there's that huge tanka at the back here that has you 35 Buddhas on it. It's got a lovely short commentary on this practice and how to do it in here. Now it begins with this recitation. Om Nama Manjushriya Nama Sushriya Nama Uttama Shriya Soha. Om Nama Manjushriya Nama Sushriya Nama Uttama Shriya Soha. Then you go prostration. Stand up. Namo Manjushriya Namo Sushriya Namo Uttama Shriya Soha. So you bless the four types. You take the top of the head here, here, here. Now, sometimes people don't go up there, it's fine, as long as you do like in here. You know, touch here, forehead or crown. One, two, three, four, or one, two, three. Now, again, this increases the merit of doing the prostrations, like it's a great deal. So they always say this. When Venerable Robina Corton comes, he does when she does it. She says, that's right. You say this little bit here. Again, you can find commentary on this. But basically, the idea of saying this is to multiply the effect of each prostration by 1,000 times. And you can find it each of these words, but you can see here this word Manjushriya. So it's really like about the wisdom aspect, that all phenomena that are empty are dependent arisings. And by reciting this, like I said, your merit increases 1,000 times. Yes, Demi.
MK from online asks, can we do that 3 times?
Yes, we say this 3 times. The this mantra here. And then you would go down and you would, you'll see there's a prayer and it comes before it, and then there's the practice of it. Now, in this particular book, at the back in the, what do you call it? In the appendices, you've got the actual practice of it, and then on page 79, there's a explanation of what's going on and how you blah blah blah. So I've had a very good experience with this practice. If it ever gets to you guys that you get stuck, but it seemed to be that nothing's going nowhere. I don't myself, my head sometimes feel like concrete, right? I'm dull as anything. Now, if something like that happens to you, stop learning and start doing this. Man, it just frees it up. Okay, no doubt about it. And very quickly, it's surprising how bright and clear and how easy it is to learn. When Lama Zopa Rinpoche and Lama Yeshe first came to the West and met all the students, so the first retreat they did was on a purification retreat. The reason for doing this is like we've got so much garbage in our minds already, right? So before we put new things in, you got to get rid of the old stuff. It's like, each night we go home, we eat, and we eat off a clean plate, don't we? And, we don't just put the plate on the next to the sink, and the next day wake up and go, oh, I need to eat, and grab that plate and put some new food on and eat that, do we? We eat, we wash the plate, then we put new food on. So we've already eaten, right? We've already got all these concepts inside of us that are faulty, create problems. So we've got to sort of remove some of that, lighten up a bit before we can put new stuff in. This is how the process works. And like I said, I've actually had some sort of good experience doing this thing where I can sort of say confidently, wow, it works. You do feel lighter, the mind can actually work with this material. So Lama Zopa saying that, like start doing that. I guess it depends a bit. For some people, it's quite new. It's like you say, it's difficult to do it on your own.
To start with until you've learned.
Yeah, so this is true. So I think we have sound files of this. Now, when you do the 35 Buddha practice, the purification method is the verbal recitation of the names. If you do just the prostrations and don't recite the names, that's not, you're doing prostrations, you're not purifying the mind. But there's 35 names. This is all new to us, right? This is not, we have to sit. So I often do it like you just sit down, then just do it. Just sit and recite the names, because that's the purification thing. However, if you do get up and start doing the actual prostration, it's much, much more effective. And from a purely physiological viewpoint, I think it really sort of stimulates all the energy, wakes you up. And then suddenly it's like, oh, I've got more oxygen, my blood's been reoxygenated, I'm all, good. And so learning seems to be a bit easier. Yeah, so with I think we have online, or you can find online, somebody else like reading this stuff out. When it's done, often like Lama Zopa Rinpoche suggests you say each name three times. You don't have to, but you can do once through and then just recite this other one three times. But if you say it three times, it's great because you hear it three times, and at least you'll be able to say it once. And that's all you need to do. You just got to recite it once. But if you hear it three times, you'll go to, oh, okay, first time, get a bit, a little bit, and then perhaps you'll say one. And then you do the next one. Ideally, as Lama Zopa Rinpoche says, you memorize it. But again, this is like, slow and steady. Okay. Then the second thing he says, as I suggest, is that we engage in some sort of guru yoga practice. So are there people in our audience here doing any guru yoga practices at all? Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, so okay. So there, as you know, there are a number of different types of guru yoga practice you can do. But ideally, what it's about is like you're trying to become used to what it might feel like to be enlightened. So the guru yoga is like you have this, you know, the Buddha who is indivisible from the teacher and the deity. You're visualizing them like in front of you. They come in, they just like we did, comes in, absorbs into you, and now you are no difference between you and the teacher. That's the idea behind it all. And then we do our practice from there. Why? To really, what to say, to jumpstart our own resources. And we can do this, but we say, often we say, oh, the Buddhas are so much better than us, aren't they? And so are our spiritual teachers, aren't they? So when they come, then there's no difference. Now we're just like them. So this whole idea of, oh, I can't, you know, poor me. But they say, poor pity me. When we look at ourselves, it has to go out the window. But we're not that fellow. We're something much more than that. And the guru yoga is this way of becoming familiar with that. As an analogy, he says, think of the practice as a flight simulator. Just as a pilot trains in a simulator to master the skills of flying before entering a real cockpit, we as students use the visualization of the teacher, guru, deity to rehearse the perceptions, emotions, and identity of an enlightened being. This is, as you might notice, that although a lot of the teachings are sutra presented, there's always the mixing of the tantra stuff. Because we need to enter a tantric path sometime if you wish to become fully enlightened. So they try and introduce it to you all the way through, but like in dribs and drabs, just to make it easy to become used to it gradually. He says, by doing this simulation, looking at ourselves, having the identity of an enlightened being, this deconditions our reactive habits, disturbing emotions, and replaces them with this altruistic response towards all beings. Now, how to do this? One very simple and fast way to do is, again, when you wake up, you've woken up, you've said the mantras, then you imagine you're at your teacher or mentor appearing as a Buddha or deity is above your head and comes in, just like we did, comes in down to your heart, either sits there and then expands into light, and now you have the light body of this deity. And you sort of try to, for those of you who are new to this, you do this so that you appear as like Shakyamuni Buddha yourself. Those of you who've had tantric initiations, you do it with the deity that you were introduced to. Yeah, so what we're trying to do, I guess, like this guru yoga, it's like a psychological tool to deconstruct your sense of ego. Because you're going, now I am the deity. I'm like His Holiness. I am the Buddha. So we really come from the very best way of looking at ourselves. Do you have any questions about what I've said so far? Okay, so let's have a look now at how we can do this in relationship to the speech pressing. So of course there are practices that we can do in the morning, and there are practices that we do in the evening. And again, this is this booklet we've been, this little booklet, The Method to Transform a Suffering Life into Happiness. And within it is the speech blessing that we'll go through very shortly. And in it, again, is this mantra. Like I said, you wake up, if you say this, everything you do, all the virtues increase 100,000 times. Then you do that Namo Manjushri, now every
prostration. Even if you're just doing three prostrations and now sit there and read, go to the 35 Buddha's names, that will do it. So speech blessing. It works like this, right? We do the emptiness meditation first. I'll do that very quickly, shortly. We arise as a deity, or think you arise as a body of light. Little white syllable appears on your tongue, transforms into a white moon disc. This white moon disc is a symbol for bodhicitta, a mind of enlightenment. Then the white om, that's the body. Something physical, speech, physical. Then speech. You have all the vowels, they go white clockwise, then the red counterclockwise, then the blue. Upmantra depend to relation. Then they all the light goes out. Goes out and it comes back, and then the light comes back and brings back all the power of enlightened speech and ordinary speech too, but powerful ordinary speech, enlightened speech. But it appears as all these different objects, the seven pure objects of the king's reign, the eight objects, eight auspicious signs, eight auspicious medicines, different pictures. They all come and they just sort of dissolve into the mantra garland on your mouth. And then you recite what's in the text. So you're purifying your body, speech, mind. Then it was all drawn back in, and when it's finished, now you're there as the deity. But when your speech is purified, then you can do any other sort of practices that when you recite. So let's go through now. We'll look at the emptiness meditation. And what I want to say to you first is, when we do emptiness, there is something that is not there. It's really important to identify what's not there and see that it's not there. Now, this phenomena that is not there is called I. It's called self. But it's not the self that conventionally exists. It's not your normal I. It's not your normal self. It's the self or I that has been misapprehended by you. So you're seeing yourself in a wrong way, in other words. And that's what we've got to get rid of. That's the I that's being negated. Not the actual I that does exist. Just the wrong idea. That's got to be removed. So we negate this thing. And what this I is an I that appears to be inherently existent, which means it appears to exist without dependence upon anything. What you want to do before I'm actually doing this is try to identify this in yourself, in your actual life. Now, it will appear to you, this I, as if it's in your body. It's within here, you know, like here we are as people. Your eye's in here somewhere. You can feel it, right? But what you want to do is make yourself scared, right? Then your eye will really pop out, right? You go, oh, I'm really scared, right? That's the one you want to pick up, that eye. Or imagine something tremendous has happened to you and then think, oh, what I want, you know, or, oh, great. Something that pushes you up, or something really pushes you down. And try and make it extreme so you can easily identify that. Oh, there it is. That's it. Otherwise, it doesn't appear to you. Right, so we've got to do a little work there. So that's one way it will appear to you. And this is the most simple way to find the selflessness of yourself. So in other words, we're looking at, wow, the self that I thought was there is not there. Does this mean you don't exist? No. You're sitting right there talking about, right? You're just getting rid of the wrong idea. And then you just try to become familiar with this idea. So a simple way we can do this now. Now remember, we're looking for an inherently existent I, not the conventional I. It's inherently existent I. So, but how does it appear? Well, it appears based on the conventionally existent I. So your actual sense of self that does exist takes on a false appearance. We have to identify that and go, well, I'm not like that. Yeah, a simple one that just popped in my mind there was, you know, if somebody calls you a really bad name, swears, you know, calling you blah, 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 and they say it to you, it hurts you, doesn't it? But you're not actually that, are you? You're just going to find it and like rest of it and go, wow, I'm not who I thought I was. Or I'm not the person other people think I am.
Angela, just coming back to the prostrations, Angela wanted to ask, what is the relative merit of modified prostrations when you have injuries? So you might be doing like just the hand mudra prostration or short prostration. Yeah. How effective is it?
Yeah. In these practices, the most important thing in the 30 prostrations of the 35 Buddhas is actually the naming, not the prostrations. It's strange when it's called 35 prostrations to the 35 Buddhas. It's the name. So you can just put your hands together. If you're unwell, put your hands together like that and just start reciting the names. If you have a lot of difficulty going full extension and coming up, then just do short ones. If you have good health, do the long ones. When you do the long ones beside the name, the merit is much greater. But again, if you want purification, it's the name. The merit will come as well as with the putting your hands together and so forth, the actual prostration.
What if you're visualizing doing a long prostration if you physically can't do it while you recite the names? Would that work as well?
Yes, in fact, you're meant to. As you sort of get better at it, you've actually got also visualizations as well. So, yeah, these visualizations, like, go slowly, right? Build up to it. You know, they say to you, like, imagine you've got thousands of heads, and each head has thousands of tongues, right? And when you say it, I find it very difficult to do myself, right? You have all that going on while you're prostrating and you're speaking. So you can see how it really works against the ordinary way of thinking, speaking, and behaving, can't you?
I found Japanese animations and anime really useful for that because they create such really fantastical images where there's like infinite creatures. So that really helped me to visualize because I could get a feel for that visualization, but just in a Dharma way.
Okay. Okay.
Mums who wrote a book just on the benefits of doing the prostration. Yeah, and everyone was like, reach as far as you can in the eons of molecules below you
that
can touch. And
that's right. You always want to, just if you're a tall person. Yeah. So it's not, like I said, when you, if you've never done these things, they're quite, they're not easy. So do it bit by bit. Like, you know, maybe just start, say the first three, Om Namah Manjushri Namah Sushri, do that, okay. Then there's the first one to the Buddha Shakyamuni itself. So you might be able to memorize that one. So like one day, just I'm going to remember this one. Next day, I'll put two together. Next day, three together. Then you'll see, oh my gosh, now you're saying I need 1,000 heads or something, right? So build up slowly. But the major thing here, I think, is the quality of it and your sincerity. It's purification practices, right? You have to sort of sincerely regret your foolishness and make a promise not to do it. That's how it sort of works. Now, okay, this is emptiness meditation. So, like I said, so I'll just do it bit by bit and then I won't, otherwise you won't understand what's going on, I think. So everyone's sitting on a chair, so am I, right? Is your body also on the chair? You'd go, yeah, of course it is, right? Okay. Now, this is where it gets tricky. So I ask you a question or you ask yourself the question. You say, okay, so I'm sitting on this chair, my body's on the chair. Am I one and the same as the body? The answer is no. And that's what you have to say. Right? So one and the same means like intrinsically one and the same. You are something physical. And you say, no, I'm not one and the same as that. You know why? So now here's where it gets tricky. You have to have, this is the answer. You say why? Because I am imputed to the body. The body is called me, but the body is not me. It's called me. Why is it not me? Why is me and the body not one and the same? Because the name I is given to the body. It's imputed to the body. This is how everything works, right? If you get a bicycle, and you break it down to all its parts. 1 moment. Like, where's the bicycle? It's not there. It's not there. You got a lot of parts of a bicycle. You got a lot of parts, and you put them all together in the proper way and everything, and use it right. Yeah, you'd have a bicycle. But just the parts alone, there's no bicycle there. So anyway, if you put two parts together, do you have a bike? Yeah, no. Three, no. If you put them all together, so then you've got all these things that are not a bike, but they're put together and they function well, it's called a bike. In the same way with us, right? We have these parts that make us up, our body, our mind, the two major parts, are each, either of them, us. The answer is no, neither of them are us, but they're called me. Do you understand? It's asking, so why are they not one and the same, intrinsically one and the same? Well, they're not, because one thing is called a body, and then there's self. They're different phenomena, right? But the body is called me, you know, self, me. When I see you, I have to see your body or hear your voice or see a part of your body, don't I? And I go, oh, there you are. So something else has to be seen first. There's something other than I that is there first. When you're born, right, was your name already there? No, it wasn't, was it? What was there? The body and the mind, they were there. Right? Then your parents gave you the name. Right? It's the same way. Body and mind are there, and then comes I. Now, if you think, no, I don't believe it. Yeah, and that's fine. You should do something like this. Doubt it. So, okay. So, if the I was already there, if the I was your body, you should be able to find it. You can find every other part of your body, can't you? You've got eyes, ears, nose, tongues, flesh, blood, all that sort of stuff, right? You can name it all. But you never find an I, and you never find a person. In fact, this was discovered in 1800 or so by a Scottish philosopher called John Hume. John Hume. And so this is what he said. He says, I never find myself, but I look within my thing. He says, I find flashes of feeling. This is the Buddhist presentation, five aggregates. There are five parts that make up a person, but there's no person within them. So this is why you're not one and the same as one, because you're called that. If we were the same as the body, why do we need the two names, I and body? Surely every time we saw each other, we'd say, hey, buddy. But we don't, do we? None of us, we don't do that.
If I was the same as the body,
yeah,
there would be no need for us to introduce each other.
No, that's right.
And a lot of us don't know each other today. Whereas when I meet someone, I go, hi, I'm Demi, I'm labeled Demi, and you have to tell me what your label is.
That's right, what your label is, isn't it? If we want all the body to say, hey, I know you. Right? But we don't. So this is why they're not what they call one and the same, or intrinsic, or what they call existing from their own side. So I like this term, existing from their own side, because you say, what is the own side of the person? You got the body and mind. That's the side that you label on a person. So you've got something there, and then the name is put on it. just like when you were born, just like with bicycles, like any phenomena in this room. You could look at it and go, there's something like that there, that's that brown long thing. What is that? It's called wood. So wood is, no, that's why they're not one and the same thing.
MK said that conceptually she understands it very logically, especially when we're talking about a phenomena like the bike.
Yeah.
But as soon as she tries to apply that to herself, she feels there's a resistance.
Oh, there is often a resistance there because this is very, this, the reified self doesn't like this business, right? Yeah. Okay, so we say, okay, I'm not the same. I'm not one of the same as my body. You're not one of the same as any other phenomenon. Why? Because you're merely imputed to it. So if something were to inherently exist, there's only two ways it can exist. It's exactly the same as something, or it's completely different. Intrinsically the same, intrinsically different. So if we ask ourselves, does myself intrinsically exist? You have to go, well, if it does, it's the same as my body and mind or some part of me, or it's something completely different. That's what we're looking for, right? We go, okay, if it's not exactly the same, maybe it's different, since it's not the same, right? If it was something completely different, we went, no, that doesn't make sense, must be the same. It's either one or the other. Does this sound okay with you? We're looking for the intrinsic thing, right? If it exists, gee, we should be able to find it. It's a real thing. It's our real sense of self, our real I, like a real body. So what's going to happen here, when you just find this thing that is not there, you're going to find the emptiness of this thing. Oh, believe me, you are, right? The thing is, to remember what you're discovering is its intrinsic. The intrinsic nature is not there. Right? Because remember, if it's not the same and it intrinsically exists, it must be something different. If it's not intrinsically different, it must be intrinsically the same. Now, if it's neither of them, it does not intrinsically exist. That's the emptiness. That's what we're going to find. It is neither of them. My God, I don't exist intrinsically different or the same as anything. I just don't exist like that. That's what we want to find. When you find it, what's going to appear to your mind is absolutely nothing. When I say nothing, I mean no intrinsic thing is going to appear to your mind. That's not going to be there. Why? Because it doesn't exist. That's what you find. Oh my gosh, it doesn't exist. We come out of it thinking, marveling, whatever, you know, because we exist, but we don't exist intrinsically. Now, the point of doing all of this, of course, is because all the disturbing emotions, all our problems arise from us thinking we do intrinsically exist. Yeah, so all the disturbing emotions come, all the fears come, all the problems come in dependence upon that wrong idea. So once the wrong idea is seen through, it's like, man, all that stuff don't come up anymore. Now, I'm saying it doesn't come up anymore after years and years and years of practice of doing the same thing. It's not like you see, do this once and it's done deal. It's not like that. You got to do it again and again.
So MK asks, will we find the non-existence or the absence of something?
Yes. Yeah. Well, what we find is a non-existence or absence of an intrinsic existing body or self. So we'll just do it. Like I said, it's not a hard thing. Let me just see what happens. Okay. Are you sitting on the chair? Yes, I am. Is your body on the chair? Of course it is. Are you in the body? You and the body, one and the same? No. Why not? Because I This is why identity is imputed to that body. Everyone follow so far? Okay. So you are not intrinsically the same as the body. Why not? I was imputed to it. Okay. So why don't you take a walk to the bathroom, turn around and look back at the chair. What's on the chair? That's right. That's right. So the body does not intrinsically exist. Because if it did, it should be right there. When I went to the toilet, it should be right there. But it's not there. So we're not intrinsically the same, and we're not intrinsically different. Because if we were intrinsically different, I could go to the toilet, and my body would still be on the chair. But it's not. So I am not intrinsically existent. You can do it the other way too, which I often do, is just sit there and go, okay, so roll your body off the floor, off the chair, onto the floor. Now look back, what's on the chair? And you go, I'm not there. And you go, that's right, again, not intrinsically different. Not the same, not different. So we don't intrinsically exist. Now what happens, so we take that knowledge, which is called a body of knowledge. That's a body of knowledge, truth. And have it take the form of the deity's body. Not like I said, it's a body, it's truth, but it's a, we make it a body of truth. So now we have why the body for the relative truth and the compassion aspect. We've already developed the wisdom aspect, wisdom realizing it, because we just did it. Now we create the body, and now that body is empty. Me, but I'm a deity. Because why? Because I, our sense of self, is merely imputed. So impute Avalokiteshvara or Manjushri, whatever any deity's name, onto that deity's body, just as we do in ordinary life. The I is merely imputed to the body. I is merely imputed to the deity's body. But that's how we exist. Okay, so now we sit there, we've got our deity's body. Now on my tongue, and all the rest, and then the whole thing follows.
Not a question, but a comment. I remember when I first started, I used to think, well, what's the big deal if I misunderstand how I exist? You know, it's like, it seemed very philosophical. Mm-hmm. But over the years, I realized that everything I do revolves around the way I'm misunderstanding, or I misunderstand how I exist, and it causes me a lot of drama in the people around me because I act really foolishly.
Yeah, this is what happens. So okay, so this is the first part, right? You do the emptiest bit. If you're really good at it or you're not so good at it, you can just say quickly, I rise as a deity. But you want to try and do something like this to see the absence, right? Just like you did it. Oh my God, there's no, I'm not on the chair. Yeah, that's right. You're not in the chair, the body's not on the chair. You take one away, the other goes. Even though they're not, you know, one and the same, or they're not one and the same, if one goes, the other goes. So the other can't be intrinsically different. Not intrinsically the same, not intrinsically different. Okay, so we're off like that. We've created our body. We say, okay. Then. On your tongue, you have this little syllable ah. So here, you find these things difficult. Just even the ordinary English letter A, you could think that's there, but just make sure that it's, or a little, some little mark to think, remember, everything that's appearing has no intrinsic nature. It's all empty and dependent. That's what that little syllable should remind you. But remember, don't hook in and grab it all and really make it solid now. It's all empty, remember that. All dependent. So if this little light syllable comes up on your tongue, and it will transform into a little moon disc. So they have a little moon disc sitting just above your tongue. And then a larger A will appear on it, which is symbolizing form. And from the form comes the speech, right? So they've got the white circle of all the vowels, then the red consonants appear, and then the blue dharani of dependent origination. Then light rays go out from these three, fill it full of space, and then they come back, and then they've got all these auspicious signs, auspicious medicines, seven pure objects of the king's reign, 8, 16, 23 different objects, all falling down, all made of light. They fall down and they're absorbed into these mantra garlands. So again, all of these phenomena, they're all symbols. They're all, you know, like seven perfect objects of the seven objects of the king's reign. And there you have like there's a queen, a minister, a general, a horse, an elephant. So you know they're made of light, but these phenomena, like I said, they're only these symbols of things. So please don't think you're like pulling down an elephant, a queen, all this sort of stuff. It just looks like that, means something else. The rain, they rain down. And then you start saying these, start saying it. So here, and you'll see this in the text, you're probably going to feel a little bit unsure of how to say this material. Just do the best you can. You can always go online too and put it up there and say search for it and find somebody else do it. You can hear them do it, and then you'll get more confidence in doing it yourself. So this one here, if you have these books, you'll see this. Anyway, it's all written there. Right? But you've got om, a, ee, oo, ri, ri, li, li, ee, a, om, a, swaha. Om, a, ee, oo, ri, ri, li, li, ee, ee, om, a, swaha. Om, a, ee, oo, ri, ri, li, li, ee. So you recite that, just something similar to that, or the best way you can. And as you're saying it, think that as each vowel is articulated, that it sort of falls off the garment and runs down through your body and removes every unskillful action you've ever done with your body. So now the body returns to its natural purity. Then you say the red one, the consonants, and it goes om kaka gaga na, cha cha ja ja na, cha cha da da na, cha cha da da na, pa 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 ma, yara la ba, sha sha sa ha, sa ha, kaka gaga na, cha cha da da na, cha cha da da na, cha cha da da na, pa 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 ma, yara la ba, sha sha sa ha, sa ha. You say it three times. And this time, same sort of thing happens, but this time, everything that you've said unskillfully in the past, the causes will no longer affect it. So you say, I'm purifying my speech. Then the last one, the mantra of dependent arising, this deep blue one. So it's got a great story behind this mantra too. So I'll tell you the story first, right? So many years ago, you know, the Buddha had just started giving his teachings, and these two guys, they said, okay, if one of us gets to get the teaching before the other, share it. You know, so I get it, I'll tell you, and if you get it before me, you tell me. So you know, one of them gets it, and the guy says, so what do you say? What do you say? And he said, oh man, it was just so, you know, but I'll summarize it, and this is what he said. Omnia dharma hetu prabhava hetu takantata kata yavana tekansayo niroda ivavari maha shramana yasoha. So what's he saying? He says, but any phenomena that is produced, the Buddha taught those causes. Also, what brings about the cessation of that production, this too he taught. There's all the teachings on the Buddha. Anything that's produced depends upon causes and conditions. So our disturbing emotions depend upon causes and conditions. Therefore, we can do something about it. If they didn't, we'd be in trouble. So you do this sort of thing. And then what happens, of course, is so the data withdraw. So the outer dharani of the blue syllables is absorbed into the red, and the red is absorbed into the white. Then those white vowels are absorbed into the om. Then the om goes sinks down into the moon seat. And the moon seat reappears as that syllable ah. Right, so it's like a reversal process. It comes you back to remind you again, everything that does exist does so dependently, therefore it has no intrinsic nature. And then your tongue takes on this incredible strength of all the Buddhist speech, all the enlightened speech. So if you have if you've read great speeches or anything like that, then great, I have the power of that speech. And when it finishes off, it's really important to believe that this has taken place. You say, may my tongue, sense base, have all the courage of the ones gone to bliss. Meaning others may be able to speak truthfully in the right place, the right time, all these things. By the magnificence and power of my words, may all sentient beings be subdued, and may all the meanings of whatever words I say be accomplished. So I think it's very useful if you've got children.
Or work colleagues.
Or work colleagues, that's right. And or if you're a teacher, if you speak a lot, this is a good practice. Like I said before, most of us, we don't go around punching people or killing people. We don't hurt them with our things. And our thoughts basically just hurt ourselves. But words, that's another story, eh? Words hurt us and they hurt others. So it's really good to be careful.
And then anyone's trying to explore this practice at home, if you look up Dharma in Pajamas, Speech Blessing, Nikki leaves it there on YouTube. And it's so Dharma in Pajamas, Speech Blessing.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Nikki. Great. So we need to do this speech blessing. Right? Now, once you've done that, so now you're all ready to speak, aren't you? So what are we going to talk about? Well, read a short Lamrim text. Now you'll see in this book here, it begins with a direct meditation on the great way of the path containing all important meanings. And I'll tell you, you finish it in 3 minutes, 2 minutes. A lot of those things look long, but they don't take long. So there are many different prayers Lamrim prayers you can say. There's one in the meditation on the Buddha, there's one in this one. Sometimes they're the same, sometimes they're different. So find one that you like. So some of you I know are doing the Vajrasattva practice, the mantra, right? So this particular prayer here, the direct meditation, this one here, is a very good one for it. It starts off like our mantra, right? We have to take refuge first and then to purification. It's all explained. But find a text you can study or a verse just to think about for a little bit of time. Recite it aloud and then think about it. The other thing he says that we should do is keep an eye on your behavior. So, like I said, I'm sure most of us aren't hitting people, we're probably not stealing from others. Hopefully not engaged in sexual misconduct. So like I said, we don't really do that sort of stuff. If you do, well, you do. But speaking is quite different. So during the day, what he's saying is like keep a record. Like when you forget, when your emotions overwhelm you and you say an unkind thing to somebody, like, oh, take note of that. That's what you're going to purify. Right? And you can actually check out and say, oh, how well did I go today? Did I speak? You know, did I swear a lot? Was I very critical of others? You know, so you just like mark it down. Because at the end of the night, we're going to do another purification practice and you purify all that then. So the daily practice is just reviewing the day. So my student coming here, and he got a lot of people offside, and it's always through speech. And so what he did was he did this little thing, which is like in the text. In the text, this fellow, he used to practice this using black and white stones or pebbles. So whenever he did anything unskillful, he put a little, he'd take the little black pebble out, put it in the pocket. Whenever he did something skillful, he'd take a white one out. And at the end of the day, he'd go through and go, were there more whites or more blacks? This friend of mine, what he did was he put it right beside the telephone, because he used to speak on the phone and he'd get upset and it was on. So even just seeing that jar there, it made him pause, you know, and go, oh, I have to be careful about how I speak. So another thing you might remember too, remember, you know, we always remember, we try to remember Buddhists. Buddhists is very careful about their karma. So remember that when we speak unskillfully to others, there's no certainty at all that our speech will hurt them, but it will hurt us. This is always the thing. When you hurt someone else, you hurt yourself. There's two harms going on here. You hurt yourself, you may or may not hurt the other, but you're sure you hurt yourself. So with that, when we do that, we want to sort of acknowledge it so we can get rid of the effect. Many times we talk about purification practices, the way to think of it is that you've just drank some poison and you know you have. Right? So I hope none of you feel guilty about that. Because, oh man, I'm a really bad person for drinking the poison. No, you just go, puh. Don't you like, I want this out of me. Yeah? And that's how you look at it, right? I've done stupid stuff. I do not want the effects. No need to feel guilty or bad or anything like that. It's just like, you know, you don't feel bad about yourself. Surely, I hope if you drank poison, you just would hope you don't die and get sick, eh? And you want to do something about it. That's how you look at these practices of purification. So when we come to the end of the day, he's suggesting we do Vajrasattva and the four powers. Again, our foundation will be refuge and bodhicitta, as you see here. The regrets come up as you've reviewed your day, or you have your little black and white markers, right? You know, oh, yeah, I wasn't doing good today, but never mind. That's what I'm going to work on. You promise, so when you say, I'm not going to do this again, be a bit skillful and say, for the next hour. The next 10 minutes, and after 10 minutes, go great, fantastic. 10 more minutes to see how we go. Yeah. Now, don't say never because you do it again, right? You make another problem for yourself. And here, of course, the major way you purify here is with the visualization. You have the neck that's coming down and so forth. And this is a tantric way of purifying. 35 Buddhas is a sutric way of purifying. Often you need empowerments and so forth for this. 35 Buddhas you don't. You can just start off. And at the end, of course, you always want to like dedicate what you do. Why? So it's not destroyed by anger or wrong views. So, any questions at all that you'd like to ask about? I know I went by pretty quickly. Again, I thought I had much more to give, but I'm okay. The one I gave you today was one my primary teacher gave to us in a class. I just cracked up laughing. You know, when he did, I thought, that is the simplest way I've ever heard it presented to me. You know, because oftentimes you read it in the books, It's like, I guess you just did it. So you meditate, just, there we go. You're sitting on that chair, yep. Body, yep. Are you the same as body? No. Why? Yep, that's right. Okay. Then sit, then do move your body or yourself from that chair. Look back. Is the other part of you on the chair? No. Then you don't intrinsically exist as being the same or different. You're dependent arising. You exist in mere name. That for me, really simple, that'll do. But anyway, I want to ask some of the other teachers to see if, how else they might do it. Often when you read it, the books, there's just, don't know, it's a little technical and dry. And I guess you're just saying, just like that, just ask me simple questions, are you there? Like make it experiential, not philosophical.
Yeah, I really like those practical emptiness meditations because you can relate to them every
Oh,
day.
yeah, that's right.
And you can also almost build them into your routine almost so that when you get flustered, you're like, oh, hold on a minute, I remember now.
And once you've like some of this emptiness stuff, if you were, either you intrinsically exist or you don't. There's yes or no. The Buddhists are saying all of our problems are coming about because we actually think we do intrinsically exist and we behave as if we do. That's the major thing. We behave as if we. And he says, this behavior will all be rooted in fear. It was interesting. I read an Nyingma text a little while ago, and this question was raised saying, you guys don't talk much about fear. And in our in the Gurukha, it's like fear is seen as a sort of, it could be bad, it could be good. It's sort of neutral. It's not a bad thing, but it's not actually a good thing either. It's dependent. If your fears are misplaced, it's bad. If it's good, if your fears are correct, it's good. So that's how they sort of do it. So when you get it wrong, you have to be afraid. You will be afraid. So while I have thought of it, and I think of, and I thought, well, no wonder people thought of it. There must be something like a god or something. Imagine if you're like in the desert at night by yourself. Have you ever been out there like that? You look up and man, there's a big, big, big sky, isn't it? And you're just this little person on this massive plane where you can't even see the edges, right? Like when it gets dark like that, it's like it's just you. Doesn't it feel like it's just me? Well, no. If you trained yourself and went, no, I'm just something else. It's big, right? But if you saw it just me, but then you looked at the marvel of it, you said, there has to be something that created it. But then out of that comes all the religions, right, with creator gods. But Buddhism says, no, it doesn't require that. Just it's a dependent arising. Just if the causes and conditions are there, this is what's going to arise. Like I said, so when you look through the philosophical reasonings to back up your understanding of an experience of emptiness, one of the things it says is that if your body is you, if you and your body are one and the same, what's one of the consequences here? Can you even think of any? One really simple one is, then why do we need to have two names? If they're one and the same, isn't one just sort of extraneous? If they're one and the same, what we just call the body I or I body. So that's the simplest one of all. I said, you wouldn't even need the other term if they're one and the same. But the interesting thing is, if they are one and the same, then look at your body and go, well, how many parts of my body? You can say, well, let's just take the top half and the bottom half, right? There's two big parts. Then you've got two selves. Yourself is your body, right? And then you've got multiple selves. Yeah? But no one relates to us like that, is it? You might say, like I said, I do a crime and go, well, that wasn't me, it was the other Eddie. Shot me. I'm the spotty. That was the other one. Cause and effect won't work either once you have this idea.
And from working in a hospital, because I work in an MRI machine, when I say to patients, oh, what's wrong? They never say, oh, I'm broken. They go, my knee has broken, or my back this, or my finger is this, or my vision is that. There's this possessing that happens. There's no, like, I'm broken. No one ever says that to me, ever.
Yeah, and if you were like one and the same, then, like you said, you couldn't speak like that, couldn't you? You can talk about my arm, because there's a self that has the arm, isn't it? And a body that has an arm. So there's all sorts of problems that come up. And if they're inherently different, then that would follow that simple way off and think is, but I could sit here, but my body would go off to the toilet. And that doesn't happen either. So you can't be intrinsically separate and different. You can rule that out. Then it comes to the same. And that's when you do this stuff. And often this is what we think, we are the same. But yeah, so we have to analyze. Okay, let's finish off with our final meditation. Yeah, so before you, please just try these things out and tell me about it. Like, we've got a whole class here. We're all in the same bag trying to get better and learn this stuff. Okay, let's do our final meditation then. Just get comfortable in your seat. Okay, so gently close your eyes. So it's just about midday. See if you can replay the last sort of 5 hours. We're going back from 11:50. Go back to say 10 o'clock, and you just go back, you're just looking. And ask yourself, in that time, have you acted unskillfully with your body? So remember, unskillfully means, have you killed any humans with your body? No. What about, did you hurt a human with your body? Did you hurt an animal with your body, an insect, anything with your body? So, no, I haven't done any harms with my body. Oh, good, good. Now, how about the speech? So from 7 o'clock till now, have you lied at all? Have you sworn or used harsh speech in any way? Have you spoken meaningless words or gossiped? Have you broken apart or tried to separate a relationship by using the speech? If not, go, good, good. Have a good day so far. Now, if you're a Buddhist and you have taken any vows, have you broken any of your vows? So when you become a Buddhist, you have the refuge vows and the vows of approaching virtue. You haven't looked at killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, taking intoxicants, lying. None of those have been done. You've written really well. If you have done, then just regret it. Just go, oh, that could hurt me in the future. I need to purify that. So when you say, oh, I need to purify that, now just imagine the white light just washes over you, because the Buddhas are always present. But I think from the heart of each Buddha, and they're numberless, this white nectar and white light flows out, goes over your skull, all over your body, washes all the way through, then washes out any of these behaviors, their causes and their effects. And as the man yourself is being very clear, clean, pure like glass. As if your whole way of being can see, be seen right through, and there's nothing sticky there. And I think with a body, speech, and mind like this, utterly purified, I can bring about my own enlightenment and help others do the same. Okay. And so just come out of that meditation now, let your eyes and flicker open, blink, make yourself present. I should also say with these practices, consistency is the big thing that makes it easier. It can be that sometimes you'll have, you might think that you need to do it really well, but it'd be better off to just acknowledge you can't, to just do the best you can. And so, like you say, if you could spend like 15 to 20 minutes each morning and night doing something as simple as this, that could be a practice. So you've got some idea of how to behave in the morning and the evening according to Lama's Lopa Rinpoche's advice. And like I said, if you do not have this book and you'd like one, just take one here. We might have some more, but these ones are here. Also online in our members area, there's resources, isn't it?
It's the resources tab.
You go in the resources tab. You don't have to be a member there either.
You have to be a member to access the resources tab. That's one of the benefits of being a member of the center. The other option is to buy, if you just only want to come for this specific course, if you buy a package deal, then Miffy will ensure all the audio files and all the handouts just to this particular DB module is there.
Okay, so like I said, by the end of this class, if you want one of these, please just go up here and take one. And there is this speech blessing thing. So you see that speech blessing is in our golden prayer book. It's up online. It's in this sort of thing. Once you get used to it, it's really quick. It doesn't take you long at all. Okay.
It's done in one of the pages, isn't it?
Yeah.
So this is like, pages enough.
Yeah, it's like you're saying, but with these sort of things, it's easier in a group, you know. It gives you more sort of leeway to not to do the best you can, but just be beneath everybody else. Okay, so I changed that writing. So perhaps I saw that last week I wrote up something wrong. It was that page 81 wasn't there, right? But here, just go through these blessing the speeches, pages 13 to 16, in that little thing here. The method to transform, well, that's the whole lot. And next week, we'll talk about how to practice between sessions. Okay, so we come to the end now to the dedication. Now, please join me in saying, due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the Supreme Guru, Bodhicitta, not yet born, arise in the world. May that born have no decline but increase forevermore. And as long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too remain to dispel the sorrows of the world. We have the prayer for His Holiness's long life. The wish-granting, wish-fulfilling Guru, source of every single benefit and happiness of this world, to the incomparably kind Tenzin Gyatso I beseech, may all your holy wishes be spontaneously fulfilled. And finally, the prayer for return of Lama's Lopa Rinpoche. In holding and spreading the Moody's precious and complete teachings through explanation and practice, you wore the armor of patience that is never discouraged. Incomparable Venerable Guru, to you I make this request.